Mr. McDonald, a professor of atmospheric physics at the University of Arizona. Sir, you said a moment ago that the subject requires considerable examination, rectification. Would you begin by telling us of how you first got interested and came to this opinion?
Well, I've had a mild interest in this problem for perhaps a decade. My field is atmospheric physics, and a lot of the official explanations have centered around atmospheric physical phenomena, optical effects, and so on. And this led me, in 1954 or so, to begin checking cases in the southern Arizona area where I live and work. Let me take one case. This is now almost 10 years ago, a rather important case. Probably many listeners will remember when it was headline news. It occurred in Levelland, Texas, the night of November 2nd and the morning of the 3rd, 1957. It involved some very interesting phenomena. I've interviewed some of the people who were involved in it. I have a map here that will give us a little bit of a notion of the general geography. Here is Levelland, Texas, a small town of about 30,000. The lines are highways running in and out of Levelland. From about 11 o'clock at night on the 2nd till around 1 in the morning on the 3rd, a series of about 10 independent sightings by 10 persons. A couple of them were law enforcement officers. Others were just drivers. Over here, there were two grain convoys involved. In every one of these instances, the interesting thing that happened was that the driver of the vehicle suddenly came upon a very large, and when I say large, the reported sizes were of the order of 100 to 200 feet diameter, glowing, sometimes reddish, sometimes bluish objects hovering over fields or roads. The first effect on the vehicle was an interference with the lights, and then the ignition system failed.
Excuse me, Doctor, I noticed that you have a lot of numbers on the map. If you could point them out, these places where the sightings were made.
Yes. There are 10 numbers on here. I won't bother to mention the names of individuals, but this 10 miles is about the size of this pencil, just to give you some scale. And these are spread over a two-hour period, and each one of these numbers, here's 1, 7, they correspond to the names of the people, were instances in which cars were stopped and the lights went out. Now, as soon as the object took off, which is the characteristic pattern, some of the cars are stopped for two or three minutes, but then the objects rose from the ground, sometimes with enormous accelerations. Then the lights came back on without any manipulation of the ignition key, and the driver found he could immediately start his car. This was common to all of these cases. Now, the official explanation of this Levelland, Texas case, based on the Air Force handling of the Project Blue Book investigation, was that this was ball lightning. That's what accounted supposedly for these 200-foot diameter objects, plus wet ignitions, and that was the official explanation of why the car stopped. Now, since we all know about the fact that cars, when they do get wet, don't usually start immediately, well, there's a bit of a problem there. But this is only secondary compared to what one finds when he looks, as I have, at the actual weather data for the case in question.
Excuse me, sir, before we get there, if it were ball lightning, is it normal to have ball lightning of that size? And
no,
would that ball lightning have the electromagnetic quality of stopping these engines?
Well, there are, first of all, the typical size of ball lightning. Ball lightning is a fairly rare phenomenon. Most of us have never seen it. I have never seen it, though that's very much in my field. A foot in diameter is a typical phenomenon. But the cases of ball lightning that are on record are strictly limited to extreme thunderstorm conditions where you have an energy source, high potential, high gradient. I am not aware of any case where a vehicle was stopped by ball lightning. I could not assert that it could not occur. Well, then this is the question. I discussed this problem with a colleague at Westinghouse who's expert in these problems. He said, well, maybe in the event of a really severe thunderstorm, you could scale up ball lightning to tens of feet, and maybe they made an error of estimating size. So I looked at the map, and I was quite startled as a person with meteorological training. Here's the map for the very time. This is 12 o'clock midnight, right in the middle of the Levelland, Texas.
That's the weather
map. This is a weather map. These are the isobars. I think perhaps many persons looking on will be familiar with this from weather sessions. Here's the Gulf Coast, and the state of Texas is in here. Now, I'll point with my pencil to Levelland, Texas, which is in the panhandle, and any of you who are familiar with meteorology will immediately be bothered by the fact that Levelland was being invaded by a large, high-pressure area pushing down over the Great Plains. The nearest front was down near San Angelo, hundreds of miles away. The nearest rain was about 100 miles away. The weather report for the nearest stations involved only scattered clouds, and in Levelland area, there were no stations at the time of the observation that even had any rain. Two hours later, there was one station that had less than 100 of an inch, and here is the official explanation charging severe thunderstorms and wet ignitions. Utterly senseless, and when I asked the people at Wright-Patterson, they really had no very good answer, and all I can say is that in cases of this sort, an ad hoc explanation is almost pulled out of the blue. I have just seen it in too many instances to be happy with this. There are many very definite things that could be done in a scientific context to pursue this problem, and it badly needs this kind of attention, in my opinion.
Thank you very much, Professor McDonald.